Good morning. If you are visiting with us, you are an encouragement to us. We want you to know that. And if, in case you missed it, I am not the regular preacher, right? He decided that it would be a good idea for him to go and visit a very large rodent. Now, I do not know why somebody would do that, but that's where they are at right now in Southern California. I am sure having a fabulous time. We all miss him, especially me. And by the time I'm done, you will be too. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be able to speak to you this morning. As you can see on the screen behind me, we're going to be talking about Esther. But you all are in for an even bigger treat, because tonight you get to hear from Andre. I am so excited to hear that. I'm so proud of him, and I'm looking forward to that, as I'm sure you are as well. The last time I was up here, I spoke a little long. I think I might be able to give you a little bit of your time back. For those of you who weren't there for that one, you will be ahead of the game. Let me set the stage for this book of Esther, so we kind of understand the time frame in which Esther happens. Due to the unfaithfulness of the nation of Israel, continued unfaithfulness and worshiping of idols, God uses the Assyrian nation in 721 BC to punish and to take into captivity the northern kingdom of Israel. About 100 years later, the southern kingdom of Judah is taken away into captivity by Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians. God's promised land, the land in which he promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the land flowing with milk and honey, is now empty, deserted, with the exception of the very poor. In 539, Persia then comes in and defeats and punishes Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians. About 3 years later, Cyrus then allows the Jews to return to rebuild first the temple and then the walls of the city. And so it is under this particular time frame of under Persian rule that Esther and the Jews find themselves. King Ahasuerus is now the world leader. And this book of Esther, if you are somebody who likes to write in your Bible and take notes, if you go to the book of Ezra and you write in between chapter 6 and chapter 7, and you just put Esther with an arrow mark, this is when the book of Esther actually happens. All right, to give you just a little bit of time frame. And I forgot to get the clicker. Joe, where is the clicker? I just might need that. Okay, well, if somebody could find me the clicker, and if somebody in the back there wants to go ahead and advance, there you go. All right, I apologize for that. That's a little small, not too bad up there. All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the Queen of Esther. We're going to talk about the book of Esther, going to make some applications to our life, and then the lesson will be yours. So King Ahasuerus, the Persian king who is in charge, secular history calls him King Xerxes, decides that he wants to invade Greece. And so what better way to do that than to bribe, bring onto your side all the Persian officials, military, all the important people, all the A-list people in the kingdom. He brings in and has a party to try and convince them that this is a really good idea. This party lasts for 6 months. You thought you had a long party before? It doesn't compare to this. And this party, these A-listers, these political elites, all the fancy schmancy parties that they put on, pales in comparison to the party that King Ahasuerus puts on. Wine is flowing. You can have as much as you want, as much food, gold, silver, purple tapestries, everything. Marble, it is luxury beyond imagine. So he has this party, and at the end of it, he has a week-long party for all the rest of the regular folk. And at the end of that party, all happy and drunk. He says, I want Queen Vashti to come out and show how beautiful my queen is. Well, guess what? She refuses. She says, I ain't doing it. Right? Now, some commentators think maybe the reason why she said no and took that huge gamble was because what he meant was, come out here with just your crown. So that kind of gives you an idea as to why. That's fine. Yep. Yep, I'll do that. Okay. So, just her crown. So you can kind of understand why she took that chance, all right? Of course, that makes the king furious. Vashti, you're out. I'm going to look for a new one. Starting then in chapter 2, what we don't know between chapters 1 and chapter 2 is King Xerxes, king Ahasuerus, actually goes and attacks Greece. This is about 4 years later. Well, didn't have real good luck at that. He's defeated and he comes back. While he's licking his wounds, he goes, oh yeah, I don't have a queen. So they start in the search for a queen. And they say, all the beautiful virgins in the land, go get them. Bring them to me. The one who pleases me the most, she's queen. Well, there's a Jew by the name of Mordecai who's living there. And he has a cousin. Some people call him niece, uncle. It's not. They are cousins. He's an older cousin. She's an orphan. Her parents have died. And so he's raising her as his own. She is taken. And the book of Esther says that she is easy on the eyes and has a nice figure. So she's taken into that harem. She goes through some beauty treatments like everybody else does. Each person, and history says again, 400 people, 400 women were taken. They all go into the king. Whoever pleases him the most wins. She pleased him the most. Esther, the Jew, becomes queen. However, the king didn't know that she was a Jew because her cousin Mordecai told her, do not tell anybody. Keep that to yourself. Shortly after this, Mordecai then, he has some kind of official position, and he is working at the gate somehow doing something, and he uncovers a plot to kill the king. So he tells the only person he knows to tell, Esther, through a mediator, and it's checked up on. Sure enough, it's true. The two men are killed. And that event, then, is recorded in the official record. All right? It's recorded that there was a plot. Mordecai found it out, and the two men were killed. Next slide, please. Wait. Search for a new queen. Go back. Search for a new queen. I wasn't watching. Search for a new queen. Never mind. Go back. Haman's plan. Thank you. You'd think I'd know my own lesson, wouldn't you? Haman's plan. There is a man by the name of Haman. He is one of the chief officials. He does such a good job. King Ahasuerus says, you know what? I'm putting you in charge of everybody. You are my right-hand man. There is only one person over you. That's me. And the king said, you will honor him. You will bow down to him. You will show him respect and honor just as you would me. However, Mordecai, guess what? Not going to happen. Not doing it. I am not bowing down to you. Of course, Haman is furious. Okay? He is furious. Well, Mordecai puts up with this for about 5 years. Then finally, Mordecai has had enough. He goes to the king and says, you know what? Well, he doesn't tell him this, but his idea is, not only do I hate Mordecai, the Jew, I'm gonna not only get rid of Mordecai, but I'm going to get rid of every single Jew out there. So he goes to the king and lies and tells him, hey, king, you've got a group of people in your kingdom that they don't obey your laws. They're troublemakers. They've always been rebellious. It's not in your best interest to leave them in your kingdom. You need to just get rid of them. As a matter of fact, I'll pay you money to do it. I'll take care of the problem for you. The king doesn't really care. He didn't even ask, who are these people? He just said, do what you want. Here's my ring. It's an official. You do whatever you want. Make a law. Stamp it with this ring. Do what you want. Just go back to drink. So he signs this law. He casts lots, Purim. And approximately 1 year from that date, all Jews, all the enemies of the Jews in that kingdom were to attack the Jews, kill them, man, woman, child. This plan goes through. Every single Jew would be dead. In 1 year, complete annihilation. Next screen. So what will Esther do? She's a Jew. Mordecai sends her a decree through a mediator, sends her the decree. She didn't even know what was going on. She was so insulated. Mordecai tells her, you need to go into the king, plead for our case. Otherwise, we will all die. Esther sends word back to him saying, but you know the law of the land. The law of the land says anyone who goes before the king is killed. Unless the king allows it, holds out his golden scepter, and tells you to come forward. And besides that, I haven't seen the king in over a month. I don't want to die. And then the most famous words in the book of Esther, and if you are going to follow along, open up your Old Testament to the middle about Psalms, go back two books, and you're going to find Esther. So the most famous words then in the book of Esther is going to be found in Esther chapter 4. She says, I don't want to die. Mordecai says, yes, but Esther 4, starting in verse 13. Then Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, do not imagine that you in the king's palace can escape any more than all the Jews. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise from the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this? Esther thinks about it for a while and finally says, you're right. Fast for me for 3 days while my maidens and I fast, and I will go into the king. And if I die, I die. Next slide. So both Esther and Haman have a plan. So on that third day, she goes before the queen. Well, goes before the king. It's like a Hollywood movie plot. What's going to happen? She doesn't know. Her life could end nearly immediately. The king sees her, wants to see his beautiful Esther. He holds out a scepter. She goes, she touches it and rises before him. He says, Esther, what can I do for you? I will give you anything up to half of the kingdom. And she stops, she thinks about it, kind of has cold feet and says, I'll tell you if you and Haman come to a feast that I'm going to prepare for you tonight. So he says, sure, that sounds like a great idea. So him and Haman go to this feast. They're eating, they're happy. He says, Queen Esther, what do you want? I'll give you up to half the kingdom. She says, she gets cold feet again and says, I'll tell you tomorrow if you come to the feast I have prepared for you and Haman tomorrow. He says, that sounds like a good plan. They are going to her house. They're going to have a feast with her again. Haman leaves feeling all happy for himself, all prideful and just, man, I'm it. As Carrie would say, I'm all that in a bag of chips. Which, by the way, I've never heard before until I met her. I don't know. That's the phrase. I guess I'm cool now. So he's thinking, he's all that in a bag of chips. He goes to leave. He walks by the gate. And guess who's there? Mordecai the Jew. And again, he will not bow down to him. Again, makes him furious. And Haman goes home, starts tooting his own horn. Look how big and important I am. I'm rich. I've got 10 sons. I get to dine with the king and the queen by ourselves. I've got power. I've got prestige. But that Jew Mordecai, his friends say, what are you whining about? You're number two in the kingdom. Why don't you build some gallows in the morning, go to the king, convince him that it's in his best interest to hang this guy. Go to the feast with Esther and all will be well. Haman says, that sounds like a great idea. So he has it done. Next slide, please. A case of insomnia. The king, unfortunately, can't sleep that night. So he gets up, he asks for his warm milk and cookies, and he has somebody read to him. Well, he has them read to them the official record of his reign. It just so happens that the part that they read is the section in which Mordecai reveals the plot to kill him. King says, what has been done for this man to honor him for this deed? And the guy says, well, actually nothing. King says, who's out in the court? Well, it just so happened that Haman had just come in that morning to try and convince the king, we need to get rid of this guy Mordecai. Haman's called in. King says, what should we do to the man whom the king wants to honor? Mordecai's thinking, yeah, who else would he want to honor besides me? I think you should take a royal crown that the king has won, a royal robe that the king has wore, and a royal steed that he has ridden. Pick one of your high officials, parade him through the town, saying, this is what the king wishes to do for somebody who wants to honor. He thinks, that's a good idea. Haman, go do it now, leave nothing out. He does it. Humiliated, he ends up going back home. And as he's explaining what's going on to his family, the eunuchs come get him, whoosh him off to this second feast. Next slide. So they're sitting here at this feast. They're happy. They're feeling good. King says, Esther, what do you want? Up to half the kingdom. Finally, she replies. She has the nerve to tell him exactly what she wants. And in Esther chapter 7, starting in verse 3, then Queen Esther replied, if I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given me as my petition and my people as my request. For we have been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be killed, to be annihilated. Now, if we had only been sold as slaves, men and women, I would have remained silent, for the trouble would not be commiserate with the annoyance to the king. Then King Ahasuerus asked Queen Esther, who is he and where is he? Who would presume to do this? Esther said, a foe and an enemy, this wicked Haman. Well, as you might imagine, King's not too happy about this. He's enraged, but he controls his temper. He goes out into the balcony to figure out what he's going to do, control his temper so he doesn't do something rash. Haman stays, pleads with his life with the queen because he realizes he's in some pretty hot water. As he's pleading his case, the king happens to come in as Haman is falling on the couch pleading his case. King sees that and goes, you'd attack my queen? You'd attack my wife in front of me? One of his servants says, well, you know, king, Haman had some gallows built that he was going to use to hang Mordecai, you know, that guy that saved your life. Maybe we should use those gallows to punish him. King says, that's a good idea. Haman is hung on the gallows in which he had planned for Mordecai. Next slide. Mordecai, in fact, is given Haman's position. He now is second in command. He now has the signet ring. He now can pass laws. I think what I failed to mention was, when the initial law was passed saying that the Jews could be annihilated, there was a Persian law that said once that happens and that seal is getting on there, is put on there, that law cannot be revoked. What's done is done. Esther pleads before him, before the king, says, do something. He explains, I can't. But you can pass another law that will fix the problem, right? So Mordecai writes a law that says that the Jews have a right to assemble, to protect themselves, to defend themselves against all enemies. And Mordecai is blessed by God because of his ability, his power, whatever. And fear of the Jews falls on all of the people. So on that day in which it actually happens, next slide, the Jews are able to defeat their enemies, and God's plan to redeem man by bringing forth a Savior is allowed to continue. And Mordecai and Esther have then, they created a feast in which the Jews, even to this day, will celebrate this event, and it's called the Feast of Purim, Feast of Purim, something like that. Next slide. And so now we've gone through this story of Esther. It's great. It's a great story. Love this story. But how does that help us? Well, hopefully Hopefully I can help us with that. That's the plan anyway. Next slide. Try it one more time. There we go. All right. So Esther is living in a foreign land amongst pagans. She is living, instead of living in the promised land, she is living in Persia, in somewhere in Babylon. Anyway, she's living in a foreign land. She's living among pagans. She's living among Gentiles. And the Christians of the New Testament were living among pagans as well. And yes, as you probably guessed where I'm going with that, you and I live in a foreign land among pagans. Yeah, they don't bow down to physical idols anymore, but the world you and I live in today bow down to gods of pleasure, gods of money, power, fame, gods of laziness. I asked Joe to sing that song, "This World Is Not My Home," because that really is how you and I should be living our lives. That's the attitude in which we should have. Paul told the church at Philippi the same sort of idea about how we are not citizens of this world. In fact, we have a heavenly citizenship. Philippians 3 and verse 20. But our citizenship is in heaven, and from it we await a Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ. Peter called the people he was writing to in 1 Peter chapter 1, he called them exiles. And then chapter 2 and verse 11, he continues and says, "Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh which wage war against your soul." And the Hebrew writer in Hebrews chapter 11, after talking about all these wonderful men and women of faith, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Noah, all these people, he says, "All these died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and have acknowledged them that they were strangers and exiles on earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had an opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city." This world is always trying to compromise your faith, to deny Jesus, to pull us away from God. But we need to keep our eyes on Jesus. Keep our eyes focused on that goal. Keep our eyes focused on Jesus, what the Hebrew writer said basically in Hebrews chapter 12, starting in verse 1. "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter or author of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary." May we keep our eyes on Jesus every single day, that we might be able to say what Paul told Timothy, "I have kept the faith." 2 Timothy chapter 4, starting in verse 6. "For I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Therefore, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but also to those who have loved his appearing." Next slide. Anger management. Fairly certain you all know where I'm going with this one, right? Haman had a problem with anger, and it led to his destruction and the death of his 10 sons. We need to control our anger. Darren needs to control his anger. I, on occasion, have been known to not control my anger and not to have self-control. Oftentimes when I do preach, I am preaching to myself, this one being the case. You know this, you don't have to be told this, but we're going to talk about it anyway. Proverbs 14, verse 29. "Whoever is slow to anger has great understanding, but he who has a hasty temper exalts folly." Solomon said in Ecclesiastes 7, verse 9, "Be not quick in your spirit to become angry, for anger lodges in the heart of fools. Ephesians 4:31. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice. He tells the Colossians the same thing. And probably one of the most well-known verses would be in James chapter 1, starting in verse 19. Know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. For the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Next slide. Choose wisely. For those of you who are fans of Indiana Jones, you'll know where that comes from. Choose wisely. Haman had family and friends who gave him very poor advice. And again, because of that poor advice and because of his anger, it caused the death, his own destruction and death of his sons. The people that we have in our inner circle say a lot about us. They speak to the choices we're currently making and to those things which will influence us later. I love this next saying. I've heard it said that you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Think about that. You are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. The people you spend the most time with shape who you are. We know what Solomon said in Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so does one man sharpen another. However, our friends that we have around us, are they sharpening us for good? Or are they sharpening us for evil? Clearly, we want friends around us who will sharpen us for good. Proverbs 13 and verse 20, whoever walks in the with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. Also, we don't want angry friends. Proverbs 22 and verse 24, make no friendship with a man given to anger, nor go with a wrathful man, lest you learn his ways and entangle yourself in a snare. And the verse which probably every one of us who are parents have told our children, 1 Corinthians 15 verse 33, bad company corrupts good morals. Bad company ruins good morals. But guess what? That's not just for our kids. That applies to you and I as well. Next slide. God was indeed working. God was working behind the scenes when he saved Esther and the Jews. I'll have you know that the word God or God's name is not mentioned in the book of Esther even one time. The word prayer is not mentioned in there either, though it is heavily insinuated when Esther tells Mordecai to fast for us for 3 days. In the Hebrew culture, fasting automatically went with prayer. So you could say that prayer was in there, basically. But the name God, not in there one time. So then you have to ask yourself, why in the world is this book that doesn't even mention God in our books? And I think the answer to that is because of the glaring of it being so glaringly obvious that God's hand was behind it. This everything that happened could not have been by sheer chance. Think about it. When they went and gathered all the available virgins, beautiful virgins, right? Number one, Esther had to be beautiful, and she was. Secondly, she had to be the right age, right? Who wants a 90-year-old virgin? The king doesn't want a 90-year-old virgin, right? She had to be the right age. So she had to be beautiful. She had to be the right age. Of all those 400 women, at least, whom they took, 400 women, and they chose Esther. Mordecai had to be in the right place at the right time in order to hear this plot, to have that plot uncovered, and it stopped, and his name written in that book. And then it had to be important that he wasn't rewarded right at that very time. It had to be at a point later on. What else? King had to have insomnia, right? Just so happens he can't sleep. He brings in the official scribe, whatever. He's read to. He can read anything, over the last decade. What does he choose? He chooses to report that not only did Mordecai save him, but also that he wasn't rewarded. And again, as I mentioned earlier, Haman had to just happen to come in right at that right time so that he could ask his opinion about what needed to happen. God was, in fact, working behind the scenes to save Esther and the Jews. And guess what? God's still working behind the scenes today, and he's working behind the scenes in your life. You may not see it, you may not know it, but one day you will. You will likely have times in your life when you think, where is God? Why am I going through this? What's the purpose of this? Why is this happening? You want to understand the how, the why. You want to know all the details about it. I do. I'm kind of a control freak sometimes. I like to have everything planned out. I want step A, step B. I want to know all this. As you might imagine, Darren gets disappointed a lot. Okay? I don't understand God's will for me in those types of details, and I think that's clearly the right thing. And you and I will suddenly wake up one day and realize that, you know what? God's put me here in this place, right where he wants me. He's been there all along. He's been helping. And sometimes he's carrying me. God is working in your life. God is working in my life today. We just need to learn to trust that God knows best. Next slide. God uses people to fulfill his purposes. God's will, God's divine plan of purpose cannot be stopped by Satan. God used Esther in this particular case to thwart Satan. If Satan could get this plan to go through and all the Jews killed, guess what? His promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, his promise to Abraham where he said, in you all the nations of the earth will be blessed. If all the Jews are gone in the time of Esther, God is proven unfaithful. Satan is trying to defeat his enemy. You can look at other instances where Israel are slaves in Egypt. After Israel leaves, they have the Red Sea on one side, they have the Egyptian army on the other. God is again defeated. Nope. God uses Moses to deliver his people. God uses people to fulfill his divine plan and purpose. Sometimes, though, next slide. Actually, leave that there, but there's one other. God uses wicked people, and sometimes he used wicked nations. God used Babylon. God used Assyria to punish his people. Right? As a matter of fact, we won't read it, but in Jeremiah, God says that Nebuchadnezzar was his servant to punish Judah. That's Jeremiah chapter 25 and verse 9. We won't read it, but for the sake of time, Joseph's brothers, when they sold him into slavery, Joseph tells them when they're bowing before him, they're afraid that he's going to kill him, and he says, you sold me, and you planned this for evil, but God planned it for good to deliver us. God uses people. He uses wicked nations, and he uses wicked people. Sometimes he uses strong people, though, for his purposes. People like Daniel, people like Joseph, men of extreme integrity, courage, and faith. But these type of men are few and far between. So he has to use other people. He has to use people like Esther. Next slide. He has to use people like Esther. And I want you to know there's another view of Esther, and I didn't really see this before, right? There's another view of Esther. Normally she's the heroine, and she saves the Jews and all is good, right? Esther is not, in my view now, is not quite the heroine that she is sometimes made out to be. And why do I believe that? Number one, and again, she's not in the same category as people such as Joseph and Daniel, because Especially when you compare her to Daniel, both Persians, both living under captivity, serving Persians. She did not refuse to participate in the beauty pageant. She slept with a king who was not her husband. She married a Gentile in direct violation of the law of Moses. Initially, she refused to go in to see the king. She got cold feet when Mordecai wanted her to approach the king. She got cold feet when she went to the first banquet. She wines and dines with the king and Haman, something that Daniel and his three friends completely refused to do. And so God still used her. And he used other regular people, if you will, in the Bible. All right? He used liars like Abraham. He used deceivers like Jacob, prostitutes like Rahab, and doubters like Gideon. All people who did not have the character like Daniel and Joseph. Matter of fact, they were just like you and me. Next slide. God can use us. God can use you, and he can use me for his purposes. He's got to work a little harder to use me, but he can use me too. God can use you. God can use Andre. God can use Tim. God can use Karen, Harold. God can use you and me to fulfill his purposes. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 13. Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, so now, not only as in my presence, but much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure. Will God use you in some grandiose way like he did Esther? Maybe. But probably not. Will it be in some small way? Probably. But whatever way, God can use you for his purposes. Are you willing to allow God to accomplish his will through you? For who knows whether you have not come to this place in time for such a time as this? Will you be that person that God uses? Or will he need to use someone else instead? Next slide. What I hope you take away from this lesson today is that God always has, God still is, God always will work his divine plan and purpose, and that he can use you for his purposes. And while we should always strive to be more obedient, to be more faithful, God can use you how you are right now. Every one of you. The question then you have to ask yourself this morning is, will you let him? If you have sin that you need to repent of, and we can help you do that, we would love to. If you've not put on Christ in baptism this morning and you are ready to do that, we would love to help you do that. Whatever need you have, if you would let us know, we'd appreciate it while we stand and while we sing.